As you know, it's been said that things come in threes, and so 2 weeks ago we all said we hope you have a Merry Christmas, and then last Sunday we said have a Happy New Year, and today we say have an ecstatic epiphany. Have an ecstatic epiphany. Why? You'll find out in a minute. You see, the reason we're still singing Christmas carols and the reason we still have our decorations up until this evening when we all help to put them up, the reason we're not like Walmart, which puts away Christmas items and then rushes in hearts and candies for Valentine's the day after Christmas, is because the season of Christmas goes to today, January 6th. Everyone's familiar with the song, The 12 Days of Christmas. Some of us may think the song's about the 12 days before Christmas because we hear about the number of shopping days left to Christmas. But the song is about Christmas Day and the days that follow it that lead to Epiphany, January 6th. Epiphany has a signature story, just as the Christmas story. The Christmas signature story, of course, is in the Gospel of Luke. It's when the birth of the baby Jesus happens in the manger and the shepherds come to worship him. That's in Luke. The signature story for Epiphany is in the Gospel of Matthew. It's the story of the Magi, the wise men who traveled afar to see the Christ child. So whenever you see nativity scenes with shepherds and magi gathered together at a manger, that kind of didn't happen. The magi arrived much later. They come sometime before Jesus turns 2 years old. And they come not to a manger, but to a home. We don't know how many magi there were. Tradition tells us three. We sing We Three Kings. But that number is because there were three types of gifts mentioned, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But the Bible doesn't tell us how many magi were on this journey together. The word epiphany means manifestation, discovery, something hidden has been revealed. It's from a Greek word that means to show or to appear. And the English word cellophane is derived from it because what's underneath can be seen. The overriding message of the Epiphany story is that God has made an appearance. That, of course, in itself is pretty special. But what makes this appearance especially special is that it's an appearance to Gentiles. The Magi are Gentile. The shepherds, remember, in Luke's gospel were Jews. Mary and Joseph were Jews. The story of the Magi was important to our ancient ancestors because it let people know that God came to connect with everyone, with all people. Now that may sound like old news to you and me, but it was extraordinary to the people of the early church. Christianity grew out of Judaism. The first Christians were Jews. In fact, we're not even sure Jesus planned to start a new religion. He just wanted to make things a little different from Judaism. And at first, these Jews who were following Jesus, they did not encourage Gentiles to join them in following Christ. There were many debates and arguments about whether Gentiles should be included. But part of the epiphany, part of the discovery here, is that God is for everyone. And how timely a message for us as United Methodists, as our denomination is about to debate and vote about the same issue next month at our general conference. And so for the early church, Epiphany was as big a deal, if not bigger, than Christmas. We don't think of it that way because we just assume Gentiles can be followers of Christ. But it wasn't always like that. Gentiles were the majority of followers of Christ now, but at that time, Gentiles were the minority. They were outsiders looking in. They were excluded. And if you fell on the side of not allowing Gentiles to be part of the way, as the early church was called, then you probably loved Luke's version of the birth story with Jewish shepherds finding the Christ child. But if you were in favor of allowing Gentiles to participate, then you probably said, but remember Matthew's version. Remember Matthew's story. It talks about the Magi. The Gentiles discovered the Messiah too. The Gentiles worshipped him too. And so it's a story that should be told year after year. For the writer of the Gospel of Matthew introduces Jesus by way of a story that shatters religious tradition and brings strangers, outsiders, into the spotlight. It's right there at the beginning of the Jesus story. And before this story is over, Jesus will shatter all of the old boundaries of religion and race and social class and status and gender. Before this story is over, all of the outsiders, the marginal, the unclean, the lepers, the tax collectors, the prostitutes, the poor people, the women, the children, foreigners, Roman centurions, all of them outsiders will become part of his story, will be welcomed and included in his company, be welcomed at his table. Before it is over, Jesus will scandalize the most pious Orthodox religious leaders by his radical inclusivity. He doesn't know an outsider. He apparently doesn't understand that one of the functions of religion is to define the tribe, draw lines between us and them, and then to build separation walls of doctrine and practice to keep us away from them, keep them out. He doesn't understand that way of thinking at all. He tears down the walls, crosses the boundaries, flings the doors wide open, and welcomes everyone home, and it begins here. Epiphany with the Magi. That's why we can be ecstatic, folks. Because if this hadn't happened, maybe you and I could be at a place like we are today. It's important to understand the significance. Because we're supposed to do the same thing. We're supposed to follow Christ. We're supposed to have a church, a table, a heart that includes and welcomes everyone, and we will always strive to do that at Asbury Memorial. And I hope we strive to do it as we go out into the world also. One of the other epiphanies that Matthew wants his readers to have is to realize that this child is the long-awaited Messiah that was proclaimed by the prophets of old. You see, Matthew knows his Hebrew Bible backwards and forwards. And he's able to use the ancient text to shape his story so that this message can be made clear that this is the Messiah. He knows that the 60th chapter of Isaiah proclaims that leaders from all over the world, foreigners, will come bearing treasures of the earth to the Lord of Lords. Isaiah says that these foreigners will bring gold and incense. Sound familiar? And so Matthew has his foreign leaders bringing gold and frankincense to the Christ child. But Matthew mentions a third gift, one that is not mentioned in Isaiah, the extra gift he includes, the one not mentioned in Isaiah. is myrrh. Perhaps at the time of Matthew's writing, the myrrh trade in the Near East was at its peak. Myrrh was often used in conjunction with frankincense, so maybe Matthew simply felt obligated to bring his gospel up to date culturally. But I wonder if Matthew may have mentioned the myrrh for another reason. At that time, myrrh was a balm, a funeral balm, an ointment put on the body after someone died. Remember, after Jesus was crucified, Nicodemus brings myrrh to anoint the crucified body. Why would Matthew introduce a substance associated with the embalming of bodies into the story of a child's birth? Maybe he wants his readers to realize that there is at least one way in which this Messiah is different from the Messiahs talked about by many of the prophets. Perhaps Matthew wants his readers to know precisely what they are in for if they venture any further into his text. This Messiah is not one who will rule the earthly world. This is not a Messiah who will use force and violence to achieve power. No, this Messiah, this Christ child, will grow up and will suffer pain, persecution, and death. Shakespeare said, the play's the thing. And I think what Matthew is trying to say to us in this story is, the myrrh's the thing. The myrrh lets us know that this Messiah is like no other. The myrrh reveals a God who is willing to suffer in solidarity with humanity. This Creator is willing to take on the form of a vulnerable child, thus becoming one with all humanity and creation. And so, like the Magi, we set about on a journey of faith in this season. And as we journey, we remember the third gift. We remember that no matter what we face, no matter what struggles we go through, we have a God who understands us, who understands our pain and our suffering, a God who walks with us, a God who is not judging us, but a God who has empathy and loves us and cares and who will help us overcome any difficulties, even death. A God who resurrects from the dead and a God who always offers us new life. Always. That's why we should be ecstatic. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. Sometimes I feel discouraged and think my work's in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded there is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul.